At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Bleach Boys, Bleach Thousand Year Blood War, episode 31, Against the Judgment. We had so many returning characters appear in this episode that we want to kick it off with a special verse prepared by Pythes. Go ahead.
I am reading from the Book of Based, chapters 4 to 86. And the people looked up at him, and Kubo in his bright glow, and asked him, "Why, Lord, hast thou forsaken us, and bade us not to look upon the glory that is Yunawichi's booty?" And Kubo said unto them, "Be at peace, for I have taken what would be a blight upon you and spared you the pain of the censors." But the people would not relent in their lamentation. And Kubo, his voice speaking like cracking thunder, said, "I take to save, but I give now unto you as proof of my love." And the people saw with great joy in their hearts that Maki Maki was there with them. And their smiles were lifted up. Their smiles were lifted up in praise of Kubo. And they sang number one and sacrificed virgins in his honor. And Kubo, his work being done, left the people with his parting words of wisdom. "Don't ask me about the Hell Arc. Amen."
Dang.
My mood was definitely brightened by Maki Maki being in here. Yes,
I love seeing Maki Maki.
We got the return of not one goat, not two goat, but three goats. Beautiful stuff this episode. If you guys know the manga, which no spoilers right off the rip for you guys, but we also immediately get three more characters returning right after where the scene ends, which is crazy. There is a lot to talk about. There's actually a lot of subtle changes that have changed from the manga. A lot of the lab scenes that we've been asking about for the past, well, I've been asking about for the past fucking four episodes are in this episode. Incredible stuff. We have the answer for what they are going to do about a lot of the characters, how they're going to do it going forward. There's a lot of good stuff to discuss in this episode. Any opening thoughts from you guys?
Yeah, this is my favorite episode of the season so far.
Now, this was referred to ahead of time, and a lot of people are still referring to it now. It would be technically a low priority is how they refer to some of these episodes, where the animation on certain parts maybe weren't as good. There's a lot of talking, so it saves on the animation. There were a lot of scenes in this episode that were kind of like still frames that are kind of like being slowly move and stuff like that. But I also think we got one of the most like well animated shots in the series so far in this episode. It blew me away.
There were so many that were actually really good this episode.
Yeah, they did a great mixture in this episode. Let's kick it off from the beginning. We go straight back to the Soul King Palace and we see Yuha, and he is continuing to fight against the Soul King while continuing to absorb the Soul King. And we see the Soul Cast just begin pooping blackness down under the Sayer Jay. They're just like, fuck it, here we go. We immediately get more Urahara shock images. We haven't had enough. We're back for more. And Soifon, again, by the way, credit where credit is due, straight into the action. Straight good to go.
Straight into happy Bankai.
Yeah, which you think about what a growth of character. Soifon's growth of character is what we wanted to see for Ikkaku. And instead, Soifon's getting all the action, just going straight into her Bankai.
Kubo said, "You guys want Ikkaku? I'm going to give you Soifon instead."
Yeah, it works, I guess. Equivalent exchange. And she immediately gets swallowed by the whole black stuff. And this is my first gripe. My first gripe, if you guys watch the episode live, you know I immediately bitched about it. In the manga.
Yeah.
Okay. Soifon jumps up to use her Bankai. Same exact scenario happens. She gets swallowed up, but she gets saved by somebody. Who other than our Lord and Savior Omida saves Soifon in the manga, saves her from the little black things, immediately goes Shikai, destroys a bunch of the black things, and saves Soifon. I'll never forgive you, Kubo, for taking that scene from me. Omida already lost one whole scene in the original BG9 interaction. Now they're disrespecting my boy again. The only thing that is saving Kubo right now is that Maki Maki made an appearance, and it really lifted my spirits. Sad. It was the only thing that could have done it. He knew he needed to make a tribute, and here we are.
And Afro Man.
And Sam, I gotta say, I was also mad they took that out. However, just the shot of Soifon going for Bankai and immediately getting washed away by the wave of black eyeballs had me cracking up. It was some Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it wasn't a great showing. It was just like, oh my gosh, like there she goes.
At least she understood that she couldn't do it with her Shikai immediately and was like, all right, if I can kill him one at a time, I'm just going to blow them all up.
Yeah, it was good immediate decision making from Soi Fan, which once again is like we're saying, she's quick. She's proven herself to be very, very quick, and she's earning her title as a captain here. I think she's done a very good job. We get a lot of images here now, seeing a lot of the everyday Soul Reapers kind of getting obliterated. And I got to make a special comment. Horrible day to be as just regular Soul Reaper. Horrible. This whole Quincy invasion thing has been such a bad day to be a low-ranking Soul Reaper. There's been so many horrible ways to die. You could be a zombie, and now there's little black, like, gremlins chewing into you and eating you whole.
They got, like, circular teeth or something, like leeches.
Horrible day. Horrible day to be a regular one. And this is where we see Ikkaku, Shuhei, Yumichika. They all go Shikai. So, RIP, my hopes and dreams of Ikkaku going Bankai here. Not going to happen. They are able to like walk on the black sperm at some point. I'm like, oh, all right, I guess that's just something that they could do. That's cool. Byakuya comes in and saves the day, which he's the perfect counter to this.
Right.
Great, okay. Great Shikai, great Bankai to deal with this. He could make a, well, we've seen it. Okay. What movie was it? One of you guys has no, I think it's Fade to Black. There was a movie where Byakuya does his Bankai and he creates the swords. You remember when they fought Ichigo and he had the big wall of swords all around him and he used it as a shield. Now, the perfect interpretation into Thousand Blow would be just use that. They're good. They can't be touched.
Don't remember which movie.
I want to say it is Fade to Black.
I think
is that the one with the Rukia? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the one I'm thinking of.
I think it is too, because he blocks Acero with it. It is either Fade to Black or it is either Diamond Dust Rebellion at the very end where they are getting ready to run up the mountain to go get to Hitsugaya. But I don't recall which one it is. Anyways, that would have been the perfect ability to use in this exact position.
But it was cool. He only went Shikai.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a badass.
I was just like,
Byakuya is a badass till this day. I mean, we knew he was going to go. We knew it was going to happen. Love it.
I do love that everybody knows that run to the R&D department.
They were already there in the manga.
Well, I don't think they're doing that right here, though, Jose. I think in this part, they're just getting fucked up. They're just the call hasn't gone out to go to the R&D department yet. They are just purely trying to run from the black shit, and they're just getting fucked up. Like, that's it. They have no idea where to go. But to what Pythes was saying, in the manga, they would have already have known that. The manga, they would have already known to go to the R&D department, so they probably would have ran to there. But also in the manga, we don't get too many shots. I love all the extra additional shots of like your everyday Soul Reapers being in this
trying to survive.
Yeah, like being in this messed up situation, you know, it's really great and it really sets the tone for like, you know, there are other Soul Reapers here that are also getting messed up. And it's like even the small stuff, like when we see Giselle later, Giselle shows up, immediately brings a bunch of zombie Soul Reapers, like, oh yeah, that's right. We lost a lot of people. There's a lot of people that have died here. I love it. I think they're great additions. So more sperm start to come down from the ceiling, and Byakuya is just like dogging it. He's just like standing there, like, yep, here we go. And all of a sudden they hit this like imaginary wall and stop moving. I'm like, oh my god, what's happening? And then we begin to see a purple light kind of glowing on the ground.
Yes.
And Aizen is here in his throne. Chair Sama makes his grand appearance. And it was making me laugh watching it. Like, Aizen starts giving this spiel, right? Like, you know, the classic, why would you fight him one by one? Whatever. We'll get to that in a second. But they keep zooming in on this one poor little fucking black sperm trying to crawl out from underneath his throne. And he's, like, slowly getting squished. I'm like, poor guy. And that begs the question. We see this scene. Aizen's there. He's giving his cool speech. He has crushed one of them underneath his throne. Did the guys come in carrying Aizen and just drop him and run? Did they shoot Aizen out of a cannon and that's how he landed on somebody? Or did like Aizen Pixar lamp all the way here and just wobble? Like, how did he land on one of them?
Okay, see, what happened was that they originally had Ganju build a cannon from the inside of Mukin.
Well, or actually, what has Kukaku been doing this whole time?
Oh, you're right.
But building the Aizen cannon to shoot him from the Mukin over right to the R&D department.
I have the correct answer is they just put him in a wheelbarrow and rolled him over.
They're like, shit, something's coming, and they drop
it just
them.
Happened to purposely stop right where they needed them. Like, cool, love it, good to go. And really, well, no, actually, a little bit of a hybrid answer. They did the wheelbarrow, and who else but Shunsui was running on top of the wheelbarrow, you know, making it go to where it needs to go. And that's how Shunsui was able to be right behind Aizen when they asked who did it.
They called up Soul Society American Branch and just got a pickup truck.
Yeah, like, hey, go, they can't see this, quickly.
I just imagine them pulling up in a Chevy
and then hauling ass around the corner.
The now riding shotgun.
And this is where we get actually probably my favorite exchange from Aizen in this specific instance, where he talks to Rukia.
Yes.
Love when he talks to Rukia. And Aizen is congratulating her on her promotion because it's well deserved for your tribute or your service during our battle. I'm like, Aizen. I was like, so good.
Stop.
It's such
stop
like,
it, sir.
It is one, a compliment, two, a backhanded compliment, three, like, I'm a big deal. You deserve it. You deserve it. Like, it's like patting himself on the back
as
well.
I'm still the badass here.
Yeah.
Relax.
It's like, I'm glad that they recognize that that was a thing. Like, you deserve that for being a part of our battle.
Aizen is the funniest character in Bleach, and it's not even close, man.
He's got so much sass.
He's awesome. And this is when we get everybody kind of going like, who freed you? How are you here? This is ridiculous. And that's when Shunsui's like, oh, yeah, it was me. Like, what's up? And we get, I would say, the iconic Shunsui line right here. And I wrote down the whole thing here. Is this about defending your own honor? Well, let me tell you something about the 13 court guard squads. Honor won't help us protect the world. And if you ask me, I do not believe using evil to defeat evil is itself an evil act. I think that is the iconic Shunsui line, aside from when he releases Bankai later, because that's been going all over TikTok.
It's so cool. Perfect justification.
It is. And it's a really great showing of the difference between Yamamoto and someone like Shunsui, where Shunsui has proven time and time again that he is down to get dirty since the Stark fight, you guys, because don't forget that he cheated in that fight.
Yes, he did cheat.
So don't forget. He cheated. And even in this, as head captain, he's like, I'm going to use every utility in my arsenal to make sure that the world is safe. And then when Byakuya calls him on it, he's like, you can fuck me up later after we save the world.
Yup.
And it's like, dang.
A Batman move right there. Mm-hmm. Like, straight up.
Yama lived and died by his honor. And Shunsui says, that doesn't matter right now.
Mm-hmm. He's like, you saw, it would have been a crazy clapback if Shunsui's like, you saw how that worked for the other guy. We're not doing that. I was like, oh my God. Like, that would have been great.
Where is he now?
Too disrespectful for Shunsui to ever say that in character. But oh my God, what a clapback.
That's true.
He's not Aizen. Aizen would have said that.
Yes, he would have.
Yeah.
I wish he was just smirking underneath me and like, yeah, how'd that work out for the old man?
It's like, oh, didn't Yama die by his honor? Like, oh, like, ooh, okay, nice. Thank you. Speaking of Aizen, he then asked for his hand restraints to be removed. He's like, oh, go ahead and release my hands and let me out of the chair. I'll go ahead and take care of this. She's like, yeah, no, like that is not going to happen. And Aizen tries to play like this kind of damsel in distress, like, well, I'm just not going to be able to do it then. You know, I got to get out of this chair. I can't take care of all these like little sperm while I'm sitting here. And she's like, I don't think that's the case. And honestly, I don't think you're the kind of guy that would just sit here quietly and watch these monsters gnaw at your body. And that's when Aizen blows away like another group of the blobs, just sends them flying. And Aizen compliments Shunsui, and he's like, you are truly a piece of work. Like, you're basically abandoning me out here. And Shunsui's like, thank you. Like, that's a great compliment coming from you. And that's when we see this purple spark appear on Shunsui's feet. And Shunsui immediately is like, everybody go to the lab. Everybody bolts to the lab. And that's when we get, which, by the way, they were doing a big push on Twitter for you could go to the Bleach website when it aired in the Japanese time zone. And you could press a button on the website and it would do the Hado 90 chant. So you could do the Kurohitsugi chant on the website and post it.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Really cool.
They were doing a really big push for that. So we get Hado number 90, Kurohitsugi. So cool. So amazing. Love the animation. I think that technique is just so beautiful every time we see it. It is so cool. And very well animated part of the episode. We still did get a couple of still animated, like, you know, still images so far before this. But you can tell that they're really spending all their money on the Aizen budget. It's like all this episode, all their money was on Aizen. They put like their best animator. Yep. They gave everybody else the day off. They took one animator, like, we're going to give you every Aizen cut. That's you.
This is another example of really good use of CG in your anime. Because it wasn't just like a black coffin outline like in, you know, the original anime. It was colorful. There are purple outlines. It is being formed out of weird blocks. It is crazy good looking.
I love that they're full on leading into the purple theming here for Aizen. Because I know in Bleach Brave Souls for Zombie Hitsugaya, they used purple for him as well. That was one of the things that he used in there. And honestly, that was one of the coolest aura effects that Hitsugaya ever had. He had like purple effects on all of his attacks. And people were a little disappointed that he didn't have that in the anime. So I like that they're staying true to like Aizen's purple. Everything Aizen sees is going to be purple.
It's going to be
like,
so nice.
You see purple on the fucking ground, it's Aizen. Like, that's what's happening.
Run.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
So I have written down in my notes at least three different times Aizen is him. We are up to Aizen is him number 2.
Okay.
Also, Soyphone's fine now, by the way.
Fine as an attractive?
No. Okay, so remember in the anime, she just gets washed away by the group of eyeballs, and then you don't see her again. Where in the manga, she's saved by Omida. So last we saw, she's washed away, and now she's fine. She's just standing in the background, like, oh man, I'm mad eyes with here.
Omida saved her off screen.
Yeah,
That's what we're gonna
that,
go for.
that's what it
Omida
was.
saved her off
We're
screen.
gonna get, you know, like 5 minutes dedicated to Omida later, and it's gonna be all of
In
the
the
good
Blu-ray
deeds.
cut, they're gonna fix it. They're gonna add that as one of the scenes. It's gonna be the only scene they add in the Blu-ray. Is that additional Omida scene? Everybody's gonna be pissed. After this scene is chronologically, just for the record, where we get the Byakuya interaction with Shunsui, and that's where they make the comment we've already spoken about. Aizen completely cares the area of like everything, all the debris, all the bad guys. It is like looking crystal clear. And Urahara comes out himself, like, oh my God, like that is really impressive. And once again, Urahara is shocked, by the way. I'm so tired of seeing Urahara shocked. Get over it, man. You're supposed to be the guy that's in the know. I'm over you being shocked. And he comments that he may be more powerful than when he was defeated by Kurosaki now. Mm-hmm. And even Renji's like, this monster got more powerful by sitting in the Mukin. It's like, oh yeah, oh yeah. And Aizen then begins to admire the chair. He's like, you know, very impressive that I aimed Hado 90 at the chair. And he's like, not entirely surprising given the fact that it's built the same way as the cross in the Mukin, but still very impressive that this chair didn't break. And he's just like, totally honoring it. He's like, this, you guys, great work. Like, I was like, this is incredible. Like, I just fucking Hado 90 on top. He cleared, literally destroyed debris. He destroyed monsters. The chair's perfect, pristine, beautiful, lovely.
Perfect condition, you know? Mm-hmm. Nothing but the best for our Lord and Savior.
Yep.
I think it is so funny. That whole scene of aiming the coffin, you'd think it would be to kill more of the eyeballs, but no, he just wanted the chair gone.
Aizen is a petty bitch to the end. He's
yes,
like,
he
asked politely for the chair to be removed. It wasn't given to him. So then he shot a Hado 90 right on top of himself to destroy the chair. Crazy.
He's like, well, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I just love how Aizen is so calm, cool, and collected about everything. Shunsui just seems to get on his nerves, and I love their dynamic.
Yeah, I think Aizen is used to playing with a straight edge character, and Shunsui is not that. And
no,
Shunsui's like totally down to play really fucking dirty. And Aizen, in a way, like, he tries to play the straight game with him. Shunsui's like, no, no, I'm not even playing that game. And then Aizen's like, respect, respect.
Like, anything for the mission.
Like,
anything
love it.
For the mission.
Respect, but they also fucking hate each other.
At this point, Soifon jumps forward again, ready to destroy the canopy that was created with her Bankai. But it's like, oh, don't worry about that, man. Like, with the gravity that was created from my Kurohitsugi, I created a fissure. All I got to do now is just blast it with my spiritual pressure, and the whole thing's going to collapse.
Yep.
Don't worry about it. And Aizen explains that the monsters that have come raining down, they are actually a torrent of Yuha's power. They likely poured out while he was trying to absorb the Soul King's power. And Urahara is like, how do you know that? And Aizen's like, can't you feel the change in Yuha's spiritual pressure? It means even the Quincy King will need some time to fully contain the Soul King's power. That scene, that exposition, is all new to the anime. That is not a discussion that happened in the manga. I think it's crazy. I think that scene does an incredible job of glazing Aizen a little bit more. That he can sense Yuha's power all the way from the Sarite and tell exactly what Yuha's in the middle of doing. And goes to someone like Urahara, like, you can't sense that? And Urahara's like, what? Crazy. But let's take that back to the very first time when let's go Dongai Ishigo, where he talked about how his spiritual pressure was so well his spiritual pressure was so much higher than mm-hmm. Aizen's that Aizen couldn't
Aizen
sense
couldn't
it.
Perceive it.
And now we're at the point where Yuha's spiritual pressure potentially is so much higher than Urahara's that Urahara's cannot sense it, but Aizen can because his spiritual pressure is insane.
Mm-hmm.
So good. This episode was the Aizen episode.
Yeah. It was perfect.
They knew that this was probably the Aizen episode of the core, and they were like, we're going to do everything in our power to completely honor this man, and they put their best people on it, and they're like, the rest of it, it's good enough. Just do your thing. Spare your time. Let's keep on the budget. Let's
still
have
beautiful,
a great time.
But you know.
Yeah, and super good.
And by the way, it is at this point in the manga that we are done with volume 68, and now we're on 69.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Beautiful. Rukia follows us up and asks Urahara if there's a way for them to get up to the Soul Palace, especially after hearing now that the Yuha is basically like stunned. He's waiting to, you know, control the Soul King's power. And this is when Aizen interrupts, like, oh, there's no need. If you have business out there, I'll just shoot it down.
When he said that, I was like, God damn.
Yeah. And this scene right here, by the way, was my favorite. I think was so crazy, crazily well animated, where he starts powering up his Reiatsu to shoot it up into the sky, and everything starts going purple. By the way, Rukia jumps forward like she's gonna do something to Aizen. Like, Shunsui really likes Rukia because he actually stopped her. Like, she could have ran forward and Aizen would have blasted her. Like, I don't know what that was, but Rukia tried to do something there. Aizen, the whole thing, like, all purple shooting up in the sky. I was like,
oh,
so cool.
Oh, he was powering
so
up.
So cool.
Cool.
So cool. I loved it. I thought that was so well done, and I'm glad that they put a big amount of effort on that scene, because once again, that's an iconic Aizen scene. People have been quoting that since before the season even came
so
out. Since they announced Thousand Year Blood War, people have been waiting for that
one. Yeah, Pythes has been quoting it quite a lot.
I love that scene so much. Also, Rukia, I don't know why she did it in the anime. She had a reason to try and stop him in the manga. Maybe I need to rewatch the episode.
I mean, it was just a simple, like,
She grabbed her hilt and then
Well, Aizen started
forward.
To power up, and Rukia, like, started going forward, and Shunsui stopped him. And obviously, we now know, with the context that we're about to get, Shunsui stopped him because he knows that we're just going to restrain Aizen and just pull spiritual pressure back in. And this is where we get the scene where Mayuri is introduced with Nemu side by side.
I have that timestamp at 9:02.
Yep. Special shout out to Nemu. She doesn't do anything, but she's there.
I got to make the most of my time with her.
And Mayuri explains that the restraints that he is under were never made to completely eliminate the spiritual pressure. Instead, they focus it entirely on restraining the spiritual pressure along with the body. And because of that, he's able to control the extent with his little dial that he has. And Mayuri asks if he truly thought Aizen's power. He's talking to Aizen. If you truly thought your power exceeded my technology, and he said it would be embarrassing if that were to be the case.
I love that. I wrote that down too. I'm like, he thought it'd be embarrassing if he got beat it.
Aizen, without missing a fucking beat, like, he takes all this new information in. He's like, cool, yeah. I was like, crank it to max. He's
let's
like,
see
I,
how
I dare you.
Yeah,
crank it to max and let's see who's more powerful. And this is when the scene of all scenes, the scenes that people were hoping wasn't going to be in the anime, the scene that people were mad that Najakup made an appearance in the preview images.
Mm-hmm.
We got tagged on Twitter instantly when that came out. Instantly, those preview images came out, and it was just game over. Because I think we had talked, and it was I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. Her name is Solange on Twitter. And we were talking about on last week's podcast about how Najakup has a death painting. So it's possible that he doesn't show up. It's just very possible that they don't. And then the moment the preview images came out, boom.
Boom. Tagged right away.
And it was Solange again. She's like, hey, look, he's in the preview images. Like, dude, like, that's crazy. That's crazy.
I think I had a really good response to that one, though. Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, Sam tagged me. He's like, Pythes, look. And I was like, this gives me hope for Robert Acutrone.
It gives incredible hope for Robert Acutrone and fellow Robert Lever. His name is literally Robert in the Discord.
Yep.
He DM'd me the moment this episode was over. He's like, there's a chance that Robert makes his appearance because Lil Toto alluded to him. And I'm like, okay, let me hear him cook here. Let me see what he's saying. When Lil Toto shows up in this episode, this is going to be a little bit jumping around. She, part of the bargain that they offer to going up to the Soul Palace with the Soul Reapers is that they will also help keep the other Stern Ritters away. So, who's another Stern Ritter that's alive, as far as we know in the anime? Robert Acutrone.
He made it out.
And now, anything's on the table. We did not see the Indiana Jones death scene for Robert Acutrone. We now know death paintings aren't necessarily a death sentence. They could still come back to that. We have officially confirmed that with Nanana. He is good to go.
What if Kubo just forgot and just jumped the gun? Got too excited.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, let's go. Let's go. Oh, wait, oh, Nanana comes back? Crap. Which is a classic Kubo thing.
That little Toto scene is anime only.
Ooh. See? Okay. Even more reason that's setting something up, Pythes.
Yeah, because we'll get there, but you know, Basby says his thing and that's it. Little Toto doesn't chime in at all.
Okay. All right. We'll have to wait and see, guys. Don't get too excited. We don't want us true Robert believers. Fists up, everybody. We're there for it. Nanana appears and shoots Aizen with his stupid ass bullshit glowing goo. A lot of people were hoping the scene wasn't going to be in it. Here we are. And Nanana gives a lot of exposition. A little bit of exposition about his ability, that because Aizen is basically having his spiritual pressure restrained and his body is restrained, so he's standing still, it allows Nanana to be able to see all of the holes that are within his Ryatsu. And because of that, he's able to basically concuss him for a second. He really aimed to knock him out is what he aimed to do. He aimed to completely knock him out, and he uses his ability, and then it just kind of shoots Aizen backwards, and he's still conscious, but he's stunned now. And Nanana's like, holy shit, that's impressive. Even Nanana's like, okay, like, wow. He's like, you are truly a beast. Like, you are still conscious after I just did that. And that's when we see it's not only Nanana. It's Basby, Lil Toto, Giselle. They're all there as well. And they appear saying they're going to stop them from shooting down the Soul Palace. And Giselle immediately raises a Soul Reaper army of zombies. And Shunsui is like, yo, we're kind of on the same page about not shooting it down. So perhaps you guys maybe came to help us. Like, wouldn't that be cool? And Nanana speaks for the whole gang. He's like, nah, we're not doing that. And Shunsui immediately puts his hand on his head. Like, all right. It's like, I was hoping like, we could avoid that. Here we go. And Baz B saves the day and shoots Nanana right in the fucking back. Chest. And this scene, by the way, is also anime only. They added a whole ass new death sequence where he falls off the fucking side of the building and bounces twice.
Yeah, I was like, whew.
Like, man, someone on the animator team hates Nanana. Like,
they were like, hey, we should have just removed that guy. This.
The guy who was doing all the Aizen scenes made a special exception to do the Nanana scene. And they're like, I'm going to make him fall. He's going to bounce twice on the ground and just kerplat.
I was just like, well, damn, that was graphic.
And I wonder where, like, this discussion happened. Like, I'm kind of thinking Sternritters are now in like Survivor the game show mode where they're like, nah, 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 you speak for us, man. Like, you can totally lead the charge. And then they all got behind him, like, so, like, we're not gonna do that. Like, we want to fuck up Yuha. Like, let him do his thing, and then we're gonna go up to the Soul Pass. We're gonna fuck up Yuha. And Nana's like, yeah, so we're gonna stop him and save Yuha, right? Yeah, yeah, totally, man. And then they shoot him right in the chest. The mummy turns his back.
I'd like to imagine that they all didn't really talk about it. They just sort of gathered together and started heading towards the place under the understanding that they were all on the same page, but clearly Nana was on his own.
He was just like, all right, guys, we're going to save this, and Yuha's going to love us. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be the best. Mm-hmm. He's going to thank us for everything, and then boom, gets glacked.
Yeah, and I think maybe Nana, you could account for maybe he's also a little bit on the older side of the Sternritters, where I feel like with Giselle, Lil Toto, and Baz B, they're on the younger side of things.
That's true.
Where I feel like Nana probably more aligns with the Robert loyalty side. Well, we know that to be the case. He's aligns more with the loyalty side aspect of it, where meanwhile the younger people are like, no, he fucking betrayed me. Fuck that bitch, Yuha. They're like, we're gonna blast his ass. This is where we then get the discussion we were talking about, where they now propose a ceasefire, and they're like, hey, you let us come up to the Soul Palace, and we will stop any other Sternritters from getting in the way. But yeah, well, that's it. And they're like, they say, we'll stop the Sternritters in exchange. Take us with you. The Soul Palace is going to be great. And they specifically say they want to kill Yuha for abandoning them. And this is where we get the mid-episode eye catchers, which I don't have translations for. I cannot find anybody online that translated it yet. But one is for the Torrent of Rayo's Power, which could be really interesting to learn some more information about. So I'll definitely be keeping you guys up to date on that. And then another is a shorter one on Kuro Hitsugi. The moment we find that, I'll let you guys know and we'll post it. We'll talk about it. Right after this, Jose, we see the back of someone very mysterious
1259
walking towards this black wall that you can see through. It seems kind of like a character we might have seen before, but I don't know.
Boots were kind of cool.
You know, I can't quite place the character because they only showed us the full back fucking design of the character in broad ass daylight. So I just can't place the character. I don't know who it would be.
Me either, but you know.
Can't believe that Yami came back.
It just seems too good to be true.
He was working out, so he kind of slimmed down a little bit. I noticed he looked really fit.
When we saw him dying in the original anime, it was really him slimming back down to his original form, where he was going to become really skinny. And like that's where he was going to. I think we've solved it, you guys. They'll show who it is maybe at the end of the episode. We'll see.
Maybe.
Anyway, so do you guys know what I wrote, right, when that happened? Jose is nutting.
Yeah. Now, Jose, were you more excited for Nemo or were you more excited for Grimmjow?
Grimmjow.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
mainly because I thought back to all those years when I kept telling Sam, Grimmjow never died. He was still alive all along. We never got to see him die. Mm-hmm. And everyone doubting me. And then finally.
Hey, this is such a bullshit story that Jose likes to tell. Nobody doubted Grimmjow. Grimmjow being alive was the most obvious moment in the Bleach thing. What everybody doubted was our dear friend Danny believed Dumbledore was going to come back alive.
Oh, my God.
That was what he's mixing two stories here. Grimmjow being alive was the most obvious. Like
Ichigo, you were right.
Ichigo slowly carried Grimmjow to the ground after his defeat, like a baby. Like, oh, here you go. Doop. And just dropped him.
He was hoping he'd be his friend.
That was the most classic. And I feel like Grimmjow is way too popular to ever be killed off. Like, that is insane. Like, Grimmjow was so popular. And Okiora, shocker that they actually
I was surprised they killed him. He was my number
That's
two.
That's a shock to me. But Grimmjow is so, especially after, you know, Hallibal somehow survives. Of course, fucking Grimmjow is going to come back. That easy peasy. But our poor friend Danny believed for years that Dumbledore was going to come back. Like that in, I think it was while we were watching the movies.
We just watched the last one because we went to see it in the movie theaters all together. And we're just like, damn, that sucks. And he's like, so where's Dumbledore? He didn't come back? What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know where he got that from. This is like way back. Like he read it online somewhere. He swears to this day that Dumbledore is coming back. I'm like, dude, that's just the most ridiculous thing
I've ever heard. It did start a huge grudge match between him and I because he kept saying Grimmjow was dead. And then I told him that there's no way Dumbledore is coming back.
This is also the guy that believes Oreos aren't chocolate.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, we just don't even. And also the same guy that believes the colored goldfish tastes different. Like, we just can't trust a word that comes out of this fucking guy's mouth. Anyways, back to Bleach. We see our boy, our number one. Well, he's probably like, I think he's a top fiver for the Bleach boys. We see Akon. He appears. He comes to Shunsui. He's like, hey, we're ready. And then Shunsui pulls out the old Soul Society flip phone and starts telling everybody to report to the Department of R&D. If you are an able-bodied Soul Reaper, make your way to the Department of R&D. And this is where we see Afro Dude Sanosuke. He reappears.
I thought it was really cool.
Such a nice scene. I love that the original, the generic Soul Reaper that he's telling me. He's like, oh, like, no, you don't have to. He's like, no, I will.
I've been through worse.
I'm like, cool. Like, what a great guy. What a great guy. I love him. I'm so happy he's here. We see, is it Ikaku's sister? Is that
what
His cousin, I think.
Yeah, that's what. You know what? I believe it, though, because they put extra shine on her forehead.
Yeah, we see Ikaku's sister slash cousin, and then the guy from the two people we saw in the original first episode of Bleach Size and Blower. They're both there. They're both struggling, and they're headed to the Department of R&D as well. Love it. Mayuri presses some brand new anime-only button and creates this disgusting, squishy ligament platform to take everybody up top. Disgusting. This sounds like
it's Bankai.
I love how gross it is.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck? And even Urahara's like, okay. And then Mayuri, the whole time while he's going up, is looking down on Urahara.
Yes. I was about to say, like, I love that part that he's just like, look at me rise, motherfucker.
Yeah. Like, Mayuri's bragging, look at this cool thing I made. If I was Urahara, I'd be like, that's fucking gross, dude. Like, make something else.
Sam, I'm about to actually you.
Okay, I'm ready.
So that gross button he pushes, that's the thing that he used when he turned all his men into bombs.
Oh shit. Okay. Very cool.
And you missed one. I think his name is Rikichi. He's that dude that thinks Renji's cool, so he got a tattoo above his eyebrow.
Oh, that was him?
What's he look like?
He's just kind of like a generic looking
dude. He's generic with black hair, right?
Okay. Yeah.
He has like a line above his left eyebrow because he thinks Renji's neat.
Renji's fan club is growing. Okay.
Very cool. Yeah, I totally missed that then.
Yeah, hold on. You skipped Nemu comes back on screen, 1351.
Thank you, Jose. Love that. All right. Well, Shunsui finishes his call, and he's like, hey, I need your help. I need to borrow your spiritual pressure. It very reminiscent to he's asking for a spirit bomb to be formed right now. I was like, all right, cool. Shunsui's doing that. And this is where we get one of the scenes I've been asking for a million years in this podcast. Kenpachi finally shows up. Kenpachi rolls in like he's lost, and he immediately asks where Yachiru is. And Yumi Chika is the one that reports, like, hey, our other men are looking for him right now. And then Nanao steps in. And this is where we get the scene with Nanao, where she's like, hey, you need to stay here and trust your men. And Kenpachi stops for a second, because he's like, old Kenpachi, be like, fuck yourself. I'm going to go find Yachiru. And he stops, thinks, and he finally agrees. And he's like, okay, I'll leave it to my other men. And Nanao even herself, like, breathes a sigh of relief and is like, smiles, like, oh, thank God.
But I love how she stood in front of him and was just like, no.
Yeah.
He turned back around.
And I think it's a good growth because you think about, and now obviously they probably weren't flexing their spiritual pressure, but you think about Nanao, right? There was a time where Nanao, I believe it was when Shunsui and Ugatake were going to fight against Yamamoto. And there was a time where Nanao like, couldn't even move. Like, she couldn't breathe. That the spiritual pressure was so crazy. And now she's in front of someone like Aizen, like, you need to back down. And he's like, you got a good point. You got a good point. Like, thank you. And that's also great character development for Kenpachi, because he would normally never listen to something like that. He'd be like, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm not going to listen to what you guys do. I'm just here for the battle, which he goes back to later in this episode. But very cool. Love the scene. So glad they put it into the anime. And this is where we start to see them basically blitz through a lot of the stuff that we've been missing in the manga up to this point.
I just want to say, Jose, I'm so happy for you. This is the thing you said you wanted the most when we were talking about our predictions.
It is. And on top of that, I got Nemo at 1423, 1441, 1535, 1632, 1703, and then Visards immediately after.
You're doing great work, Jose. You're doing great work. So we get coming up next, I put this as the Shunsui speech time. This is all new.
That's exactly all of what this I have
is
written
all
too.
Anime only, which is crazy. And I thought, this scene was so good. So good. I love the theming to it. I love the positioning of all the characters. I love that they brought all the regular Soul Reapers together. I thought this scene was so incredible and such a well-done scene. I wrote this a little bit later. In the manga, they do all of this just in the lab. They're just like, yeah, just come together, form the gate. We're going to go into the lab. You don't even see them form the gate. It just comes back in the manga. They're like, oh, man, like something else happens. I'm not going to spoil it ahead of time. Something else happens. Like, oh, man, we only got one gate done. I'm like, that's it. I'm like, what? This whole scene is crazy. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Shunsui speech time. So everyone is on the weird pedestal created by Mayuri. So the main captains are in the middle, and then we have our surrounding various lieutenants, seated officers that are around the side. And Shunsui begins his speech saying that the whole world is on the brink of destruction. They don't know the status of Ichigo Squad. They don't know the status of Squad Zero. So that leaves them with one mission: to stop Yuha. Past grudges are irrelevant now. This is our fight. And as he's giving the speech, we kind of see the reaction, like everybody in the crowd.
Yes.
I cannot understate how much I love this scene. This might be like my favorite scene from the whole season so far. I love this. And so what's going on, we get to see both of Ukitake's, I believe, are they third seats? The two people that are always with Ukitake that I can never remember the names. Isane's sister, brother. Gione and Sentaro. So we see the two of them, they both decided to stay in the lab of Ukitake, so they're not up there. And then we also see, I believe his name is Yasuchika, and that's the blonde guy with glasses who is the co-third seat officer with Hanatoro, right? That's his position.
Natros, I don't think he's third seat yet. I think he's still seventh seat.
Okay, future co-third seat with Hanatoro, which love him.
No, I think he leaves. I think he goes and he joins Tetsu Zaibon squad.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Well, I stole that off the wiki, so... Because I had to look up what his name was. I put blonde guy with glasses, Soul Reaper, and he came up immediately.
That's a good Google then.
I mean, how many blonde guys with glasses are there in the Soul Society as a whole? I think he's the only one.
I think he is the only one.
How many characters with glasses are in Soul Society?
Well, if we're counting filler characters, we could immediately go to that fucking guy. Let me think of his name. Magoto. He's got glasses.
Magoto.
You said the name.
Fucking guy.
I was going to try and trick you into calling him that, but you did it yourself.
Anyways, continuing on, we see Mashiro, which, you know, is cool and all. That's fine, but who is that standing right next to Mashiro? It's the Return of the King, Return of the Goat, Maki Maki, standing right next to him. Now, I do want to give a shout out to Mashiro here, because how sad would it be if it's like one of the last times we see Mashiro and she got outshined by Maki Maki? Like, that's unfortunate, but my goat is here now. I got to make a defense here, and I got to talk to some of you guys out
before
there.
Before you start, go ahead. I just want to say, having not seen the episode at the time, I saw he was in there, and I just said, I can't wait for how righteous Sam is going to be.
You thought the same thing? I was just like, boy's back.
People gave Sam hell for saying that he wasn't dead. So Sam, pop off.
So for a year now, I have been getting crapped on. Because we put out the Maki Maki video when we first saw him. For those of you guys that are just joining us, Maki Maki was in the crowd when Kenpachi was fighting Grimmie. And that's the first time that we saw him return here. And it was amazing. It was so cool. Love that they showed him. And then after Kenpachi defeats Grimmie, he gets jumped by the Bambis. Everybody was coming to the comments and saying, Maki Maki died against the Bambis. There's a scene of him dying against the Bambis. He got crushed by many. I think it's specifically what people were saying. He got crushed. I was telling people, show me the scene. I went back and I looked at that scene. There's not a sight of Maki Maki. Show me where he died. Not a single person could do it. But everybody, I still get comments to this day. Maki Maki died. He's dead. Like, Maki Maki's dead. He's not going to be here. Maki Maki's gone. I was like, there's not a scene. I don't know where people are getting this from. I don't know where that came from. I don't know. Somebody like drew Maki Maki in there at one point. I've been saying forever, he's not dead. He's not dead. My boy, I'm a true believer. Call me Shrek. I knew he was still alive. And Kubo graces my beautiful eyes, my horrible glasses eyes, with Maki Maki standing right next to Mashiro. Like,
is that the guy that's always asking for the bounce?
Dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me throw him a bone.
So happy. So happy that he's there. I knew he didn't die. You think about Maki Maki as a character. He's a coward. All right. But he was there in the original Soul Society Rescue arc. He was there cheering on Kenpachi versus Grimmie. He would have ran away at the Bambis. If he saw Kenpachi getting defeated, Maki Maki's the first character to be out of there. He's gone. He's like me in the Bleach world. He'd be out. He's like, fuck that shit. But he's here giving his reishi, his spiritual pressure to this gate, and he gets cheered on. We see him twice in this episode. We don't only really see him once. It's not even a throwaway. They go back to him to show that he's on board also.
He's
grown. He gets character development in this episode. Maki Maki gets true justice in this episode. And fuck you guys, okay?
I have been waiting for this all day.
I saw the post immediately on Instagram. I was just like, oh, Sam's gonna go nuts.
Dude, I was getting ready to go to work, and I just see him. I see that he's there, and I hit like, repost, head to work. I'm just waiting for Sam.
There is another very good question, and this was actually someone tweeted this to my Maki Maki Twitter post. The username is Silver, and they said, my question is, where the fuck are Tetsu Zaimon and Sajin at?
Yeah, right?
Which is a great great question.
That's a really good
question. Where is Komamura and Tetsu Zaimon? Where'd they go?
See, Tetsu Zaimon unlocks his Bankai at this moment and saves Komamura.
Because you think about it chronologically, the last we saw them, they were walking towards the giant tower where Yuha was. And Yuha blasts up. Ichigo goes and chases them. We have so much stuff that happens in between this. Where did they go? What is happening with them?
I can only imagine a comedy of errors because they head towards the tower, but then Yuha just leaves and they're like, well, where do we go now? We'll maybe go hang out with Squad 4 and heal. And then the little, you know, the eyeballs come down. They're like, oh shit, that's a problem. And they're probably being chased the whole time and they're like, we can't come to lab since we were busy.
It's some Scooby-Doo shit right there.
It is absolutely some Scooby-Doo stuff happening in the background. I want that filler episode.
And I like to think Tetsu Zaimon also is so out of shape that he's having to stop and get a breather multiple times from Jiren Komamura. Where, like, he gets to the base of the tower and he sees, like, they're gone. He's like,
they finally go to the base. And then they're like, we have to go all the way up there. They get up top and they're like, where the hell is everybody?
They hear the thing. Come to the R&D department. If any able body, it's all the way on the other side of the stairs. He's like, oh, man. It's like, this is fucked up. And he sees all the blobs start to come. They got to, like, hide inside. They're like, this sucks.
Just played the Benny Hill theme.
Yeah.
Just, they are gone. I don't know what happened to them. I don't know. I don't think we're going to see them. I have no idea what's going on. The visors appear here. We get Hiyori, Love, Lisa, and Hachi. Love them all. Shinji and Hiyori immediately go at it. And there is one line in here that made me crack up where at a certain point, Hiyori's like, I'm just going to start ignoring the person with the bowl cut. And Shinji deflects that to Soifon, like, hey, did you hear that? Hiyori said she's going to ignore you. And Soifon's like, get away from me. I'm going to kill you.
Yep.
I was like, that is so funny. It was so, so good. I love Shinji and Hiyori together. They are hilarious.
For how serious, like, the whole season has been, I mean the whole Thousand Year Blood War, like, these little tidbits of just humor is hilarious. Yeah.
Someone said after we were done watching it that this was the perfect Calm Before the Storm episode, and I agree with that 100%.
Didn't Shinji do something earlier, like a couple episodes ago, like right before they got
with Soifon also, when they were on the way to the R&D department?
He just loves talking trash.
He loves talking with Soifon.
But that haircut,
I love his haircut. It's so stupid.
So Hiyori begins to pour a liquid from her magic genie lamp at this point, and Urahara explains that this is actually the what they were doing the whole time in the real world, and they were collecting the substance created from the distortion between the worlds, and they need it to head to the royal palace, and this is something that they could only do while Ichigo has created that hole in the canopy. Urahara then sends the visors immediately, like, hey, go get your Shahakusho on. And he said that it's in like the autopsy room, okay, like, I don't want to get dressed in there. No, thank you.
So when I thought about that, I was like, oh, do they have the zombie bodies in there?
They could. That could be like, where it's at. Yeah. And then Hiyori wants to argue still, but Love, like, basically full on picks her up and is like, let's go. And Love says Rose, Kensei, and
Shinji.
Who am I missing? Shinji are all putting their lives on the line here. And that kind of puts Hiyori in line. She's like, okay, I'm not going to fight. But how does he know that? How does he also, I assume that he does not know that Rose and Kensei are.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Zombies. I would assume that lines up, and he just assumes that they're still fighting really hard somewhere out there because he's like a good friend. That's gonna be brutal.
Okay, and here's my dig. He just does not mention Mashiro at all.
He forgot that she was there.
Yeah, someone was saying that this is the last time that we see Mashiro, which I don't know if that's true. Pythes, you know?
I don't think she comes back in the manga.
No.
Not until the final chapter. Damn.
That's exactly what everyone was saying. I did read that comment too.
Yeah, that would be so sad if this is the last time we see her. She gets no recognition. Because you think about it, Kensei is also pretty much out of the picture, right? We don't see Kensei.
Yeah.
Yeah, he and Rose are busy being unzombified.
Yep.
During so, the
like,
canisters,
that, like,
right?
That's it. And that's her captain. So, like, it's over. And they love Shuhei. So they're just going to keep using Shuhei. But the rest of them are gone.
Well, I like the meta idea for the Weebs Guild that, hey, man, she knows where it's at. And she's next to Maki Maki, and that matters the most.
That'll get her the most screen time in our heart. That's all that matters.
I can't. Okay, so can we get to the best still shot in the episode? It cuts to the lab, and Renji's having a conversation with Basby, and they're talking shit.
Oh, yes, my God. And, like, Basby's, like, full-on pointing at Renji. He's like, oh, okay, cool, love it.
Pointing at the brows. I love Rukia's face throughout that whole bit.
She's giving Renji the side eye, and her hand is on her sword.
Yep.
And did you know in the background of that scene, Lil Toto was just having a regular conversation with Shinji?
No. Hold on. Let me see. Okay. I like that a lot.
I was like, yeah, I don't need animation for this. This still shot's all I wanted.
Yeah, sometimes the still shots, like, they just do a perfect job. It's like, hey, look at all these characters interacting. It might be because this one's zoomed in,
but I don't see her talking to anybody.
It's a frame where they pan.
That's funny.
So it's her and Shinji's all the way on the right.
She is talking to someone in that direction.
Yeah, she's talking to Shinji, and it's so funny. I want to be a fly on the wall and know what that conversation is.
After this, we get the conclusion to our love and our savior, Aizen, as Shunsui is kind of hanging out next to him, and Aizen begins to regain his movement, and Aizen's like, you know, if you wanted to kill me, like, this is the time, like, go ahead and do that. And Shunsui laughs. He's like, please, like, if that were true, I would have done that a long time ago, like, don't worry about it. Also love that Shunsui's like, oh, trust me, if I saw that weakness in the eye, I would have blasted you. Like, it would have been game over.
I love the fact that he's just still on the ground level of this giant tower. Yeah. He heard the speech from Kiraku, and then he's just like,
yeah.
Did someone forget about me?
It's so funny. Even Shunsui, like, so they start talking about what happened with Nanana, and Shunsui says that how impressed he is that he is able to actually move right now. Mm-hmm. And he says that he feels sorry for the poor Quincy, and Aizen was like, you shouldn't feel sorry for him because, one, I was like, I've never been immobilized before. Like, it's never happened. He's like, so don't feel bad for him. And Shunsui's like, thought he'd give this whole speech, which I thought was so funny. He's like, dude, like, you were not only immobilized, but you were also having your spiritual pressure restrained, and then you were still able to move instantly. And I was like, he's fine. Like, I've never been immobilized before. Like, that's a big feat for him. Yep. In the manga, by the way, while this conversation is happening, we actually see another shot of Nanana's body while they're talking about it.
Just dead.
They cut that from the anime, probably for obvious reasons. Not needed, but I thought it was very funny that they're just like, you know, we're going to give Nanana two bounces on his body, and then we're just going to call it. We're not going to see him again.
I'd like to point out that Nanana is more successful than, like, the Gotei 13 during
the
fake Karakura Town arc. If Nanana was there, they might have gotten him.
they talk about also how important it could be. Like, imagine you could stun Aizen for like a second. That would be huge.
Dude, that's
that'd be
huge.
Really, really huge. I mean, that's basically how they fuck up Yuha at the end. Spoiler. Yeah,
but 5 full minutes? It's crazy impressive.
Shunsui continues on with Aizen. He's like, well, if you're not in top shape, do me a favor and just stay here until the gate is ready. I don't know why they wouldn't want Aizen to be up there before the gate is ready. It seems like if it's a competition of spiritual pressure and Reishi, they would kind of want Aizen in there no matter what, even if he's not in top shape, unless they just assume that he's going to fuck it up.
I mean, we saw him aim a black coffin just to get rid of his chair. I can see him being a petty bitch.
Yeah. He's like, oops, I blew up your
great
door.
You guys have just gathered everybody in one spot. Hato 90 Kurohitsuki. Just like blast everybody.
Oh, sorry about your door, guys. Guess you guys need me again.
Yeah. Guess we're back to shooting down the Royal Palace. Here we go. And now Nanana's not here, so best of luck.
I guess they have to make the door, and they just, it has to be done first, or Aizen's gonna mess with us. I know he's gonna do it.
Yep. Like, we're good using you, we just don't really trust you that much, so if you could just stay 90 feet away. He's like, can't come closer to a school. He's been given the policy.
He's got the restraining order.
Yeah, he's like, just stay right there, we'll come get you when we're ready. Thank you.
They're gonna like raise him up on, they're gonna tie a rope to the chair and just pull him up foot by foot.
After this, we get some explanation about Urahara from Urahara about the gate, and this is where we get the actual confirmation that he can only use this method while Kurosaki has torn a hole through the membrane, and there actually might not be a way for any of them to return at this point. And Soifon is the first one once again. Soifon is getting a lot of love. Someone on the staff loves Soifon. Soifon is the first one that gets mad, and he's like, she's mad that he told them the truth just now, as if that was going to stop them from going. And we get a lot of people chiming in here, like Rukia saying, like, you were, you know, like, you should know better. Soifon tells Urahara, you were once a member of 13 court guard squads. You disrespect us, thinking that that would change our mind. And then we see a brief moment of Ukitake's hand twitching during this speech. First of all, he's still alive? While this is happening, I guess they haven't taken Mimihagi completely off yet. Are they planning to use Ukitake for something later? I would assume that my answer to that question would be shown in the next episode, especially after the after credit scene is Yuha officially absorbing the whole Soul King.
Yep.
So I assume we will see what the status of Ukitake is, but I thought that was weird. I thought that was very weird.
They went straight to his arm.
They specifically show the arm twitching, and it kind of was like, are they planning to give him some, like, Pythes, are they planning to give him a last send-off at some point? Are we going to get a last little moment with Ukitake?
Well, in the manga, by this point, there was a scene where the black mist had stopped coming out of Ukitake, and he had kind of, like, collapsed completely into, like, Sentaro and Kiyone's arms, and that's the last you see of him. But because he hasn't, like, collapsed all the way, like, specifically into the liquid, that liquid that Hiyori had poured out, so he collapsed into that and was just gone, and that's all you see of him, so he hasn't done that yet. So I'm assuming that he's not gonna be gone, until Yuha's done.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was just an interesting little scene there. It could just be literally the next episode he collapses into both of those people's arms and is like, okay, that's the end of Ukitake. Interesting. Following that, we get Kenpachi. He also chimes in. He's like, yo, I don't care about any of this. Like, I just want to go up there and beat those bastards up.
Let's
go. And I'm like, Kenpachi's back, baby. Kenpachi's on deck. And then here we get the monologue from Aizen, basically scoffing at the thought that the Quincy and the Soul Reapers are working together. And he's like, it's not necessarily that they're working together, but that they have a common goal, but still. And then he says, how ironic that the person who stopped me from getting to the Royal Palace enters it before me. And then he says, you are truly insufferable, Kurosaki Ichigo. And this is when we go over to the Ichigo scenes, of course. I don't know if we want to stop right now and potentially any further comments about the Shunsui speech scene and all that as a whole. I thought that was really, really good. I can't say enough nice things about that. I think Puro Films cooked. I think Kubo cooked. I think that whole setup was so good. It reminded me a little bit of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like when they're out on their platforms giving like the grand speeches of the stormtroopers is what it reminded me of. Very inspirational. I think it just shows Shunsui's a good leader. He's a good leader. He's like out there giving the speech and he's like rallying. Everybody's like, yeah, like let's do it. You know, like I'll give you my energy for your spirit bomb. Let's send it. I loved it. I love the scene.
Just because I've been watching Lord of the Rings right now, it was that from the Rohirrim.
Oh, the Battle of Pelennor Fields.
Yeah. Yep. I was just like, oh my god, I got chills.
It was good. It was a great scene.
It's so good.
I like it because it is both a really epic speech, but it's not like crazy and bombastic. And are you with me, brothers? He's giving a very matter of fact speech, like, hey, there's a problem, and we're gonna go solve it, and we need your help to do it.
Yeah, he straight up just says, like, we're the only ones that can handle this. It's up to us, so let's do it.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things that he does say is, like, hey, any past grudges, they're done. Like, we're moving forward. Our only option is defeat Yuha. And I'm like, that's incredible. I'm like, love it.
That's right.
And to go back to what, Sam, you were saying earlier, it's so impactful that all of the, like, just the rank and file soldiers were there. Because obviously he didn't make a speech in the manga. In the manga, it was all just primary characters. It's, hey, we're all in a lab, grab this weird ball, we're going to make a gate. Instead, it's, all right, we got everybody, we're going to make a speech. It's, you know, speeches, they reassure people, they hype people up. We're on a weird, gross platform Mayuri made. This is so much better than the manga. I think everything that happened this episode is better than how they did it in the manga, period, except for the Omaida getting shafted.
True. Love that. I agree with everything that you just said. Following this, we get our Ichigo and crew scenes, and Ichigo awakens to see Orihime right in front of her. She's, like, super thankful that he's now awake and begins to almost tear up, and then she collapses into his arms. I thought it was so cute. So cute.
Same.
And then we find out she's just hungry because she's been overworking
Mommy
herself.
Mommy needs to eat.
Yeah, and they say that Orihime has been working overtime healing everybody's injury, and Yodoichi chimes in even that she healed her arm completely. Now we see that Yodoichi's arm is all good to go. Chad asks if Ishida really ... And she goes like, yeah. And then Ganju chimes in. He's like, oh, so he really did betray us. Firstly, like, guys, I'm flip-flopping on Ganju here. Love Ganju. He's a great guy. Us? Ganju, you're not part of the crew, dog.
He's like, part of the game.
Like, he didn't betray us. Like, you're not besties with Udi. I don't know where this us is coming from. He also, Ganju doesn't like Soul Reapers, so I don't know where this us is coming from.
Doesn't matter if he betrays him. He's a Quincy. That's okay. When he's a Quincy, he doesn't have any innate beef with him like he does with Ichigo. And I feel like Ganju sees himself as part of the squad. He was there to rescue. He helped out.
He's like the guy who's like photoshopping him into the friends' photos. And he's like, Tsukishima. I was there as well. Like, yeah, a worse Photoshop written version of Tsukishima. Like, he has no powers whatsoever. He just knows the power of Photoshop and just puts himself in all of those. And he's like, I'm right there with you, buddy.
He helped in Soul Society, and I feel like that mission was so big, and he and we were part of it. Wakamundo was actually, it was actually before it was desert. It was a big ocean. Ganju turned it into a desert using his amazing sand skills.
Wakamundo was created by Ganju's power, so in a way Ganju is like the god of Wakamundo, so that's just how good he is. He created actually that whole scenario because he wanted to give Ichigo and friends something to do. That's what he wanted, to have his friends have fun.
You know what, he probably told Ishin too about the Dongai thing, you know.
Yeah, he slipped a little note under Ishin's door one day, and Ishin's like, okay, this is great.
It's his uncle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, Uncle Ishin, here you go. You might need this information at some point.
Okay, this is going too far. I love glazing Chad. I will not stand for glazing Ganju.
So this is where Ichigo then sees Kone on the ground. He looks really beaten up. And I believe it's Orihime. She's like, Kone was actually the MVP. Mm-hmm. When he saw you falling, he actually inflated his body to break your fall. And then, so funny, without missing a beat, next scene everybody's praying for Cohen. Yes. Like, RIP. Like, oh, I'm like, that was so funny, really, really funny. And then Cohen like immediately hops back to life. He's like, don't write me off like that. Like, he says that he's been hidden in Ichigo's clothes, and if it wasn't for him, they would have died. Like, it would have been game over. And that's when we get the classic, this is classic Bleach right here, where Ichigo grabs Kone and gets really mad at him for hiding within his clothes. And Kone threatens to go muscle mode. He's like, I'm going to go muscle mode. I'm going to beat you up. And Ichigo immediately like changes, and he's like, you know what? Thank you, Kone. Like, I appreciate it. And I love Kone is now like, wait a second. Like,
that's not supposed to happen.
Like, you're ruining my popularity. Like, you're supposed to beat me up so I can garner sympathy and like, gain popularity. Yeah. And then like immediately mad. He's like, you're ruining it. I love that.
I love Cone.
Love it. Love it. Love it. I love it. Just, it's so much growth in a lot of characters that I love that Ichigo's like, hey, Cone, you know what? Thank you. Like, thank you a lot. This scene in the manga is very, very different. Let's finish up the Yodoichi scenes, and then we'll head back and we'll talk about the differences in that scene right there. Yodoichi chimes in here basically saying, like, are you ready to mount a counterattack? And now in the manga, this is where you would have seen a scene looking up Yodoichi's skirt. They cut that from the anime, of course. We did not get that here. And we instead see a stake be put into the ground next to Yodoichi's feet. It's purple. Looks very cool. And she said there's no telling when this area or the world will begin to fall apart. So they need to move quick. Ichigo's like, well, I don't know how we're going to get back up there without being seen. If they see us coming up, like, we're sitting ducks. Like, it's game over. And she's like, oh, don't worry about that. And then yells, open it. And we get the old school Garganta sound.
I love that
beautiful
sound.
Beautiful sound to my ears. And we see Grimmjow. It made me laugh when Grimmjow exited that Garganta. Why is he so bashful, Jose? Why is he so bashful?
It's like when you haven't your friend texted you and then you forgot to respond and then you're like, shit, I forgot we're supposed to hang out.
He's walking so, like, he's too cool for school. Hands in the pocket, looking down at the ground, like, not making any eye contact. That's like, this fucking guy.
It's so epic. I have a painting of him.
Yeah, Grimmjow just is like, Grimmjow's here in the Garganta, but he immediately quickly changes. Well, we get a better look at Grimmjow where he's like, oh, like, yo, Kurosaki. And then it says, yo, it's been a while, Kurosaki. And that is the end of the episode right there. We see OG Grimmjow immediately come back. The moment he starts speaking to Ichigo, boom, OG. But I don't know why he's so bashful. But that is true to the manga, how he entered also.
I splooged when I heard the Garganta noise. I was like, yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. So let's talk about that Kone scene and Ichigo and friends and how they got up on that platform and how they got back with Yodoichi. In the manga, specifically talking about the platform moment, Ichigo awakens on the platform and he asks what happened. He asks, how did he get knocked out? Now, we're going to rewind a little bit even further here, because in the manga, we talked about this last episode, don't forget that Ichigo and the gang in the manga were shot down by Uryu. The ground underneath them was shot. They were falling. And then I believe it was Lilibaro shoots an arrow at them as they're falling. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just take them out. In the manga, it shows that Ichigo actually caught that arrow before it hit him. Like, he caught it with his hand. And so he gets rid of it. And then Orihime uses her classic elevator ability that we were joking about last episode. That is how it works in the manga. She uses the elevator ability. And as she's, like, starting to go up, that's when we see Yodoichi already landed on that platform and, like, shot a grappling hook at it. Like, hey, like, come up here. Like, come on up. And as that is happening, Kone hops out of Ichigo's Shihakusho, goes buff mode, hits Ichigo's head into Orihime's head, and he gets knocked out.
Yeah.
That is how it happens in the manga. I don't know what the anime has about animating Buff Cone, but this is twice now that we've not gotten actual animation on Buff Cone.
So we got no Buff Cone, we got no Rukio Booty, and we get no Yodoichi Upskirt.
Yeah, that's three strikes. That's three strikes, guys. The Japanese people, they love baseball. You're out. That's three strikes.
I will forgive this because once again, we got grace with Maki Maki.
This is true.
If it happens again, I'm going to be mad.
After credit scene for Bleach Size Blower episode 31, we see all the Schtzoffel kind of standing around Yuha, and Yugen looks over and says, "It's over." And then all the Royal Guard are like super shocked. Dude, that they look shook. And Yugen continues on that our majesty has taken every last bit of the Soul King. The Soul King is no longer. From here on out, it's a new world. And then we see Yuha with his new like black kind of cloak on him with all the eyes. And we also see a image of Udyu like sweating.
Yeah, this is happening. Sweat. I was like,
ooh. And they show, which I believe would be the Seirite, which now has like all this venom stuff coming all over, like lifting some of the buildings up in the air. Really cool. That is the end of the episode. I think it's something to be really said that Udyu is like, what the fuck did I get myself
into? He's like, I'm fucked.
Like, this is becoming worse. Like, I think maybe in a world Udyu thought that it wasn't going to be possible for Yuha to absorb all the Soul King. Like, oh, don't worry about it.
He was expecting, great. You know, maybe a little bit of a residue or something.
Because he's done it before. He can take a couple parts. But he fully absorbed the Soul King here. And Udyu is sweating. He's like, oh, crap. Like, this is not good. Now, in the manga, again, it is different. It is a little bit different in the manga this time. They streamlined it in the anime. In the manga, the Schtzoffel are like fucked off hanging out in a lounge somewhere. They're like on beanbags hanging out in a lounge talking about it. Well, because Yuha in the manga tells them like, hey, it's going to take a little bit of time. Like, don't let me be interrupted. They go fuck off to go hang out somewhere. They're having a blast.
They went back to the cellar where all the food
was. That's where they've been hanging out this whole time, where we were asking where they were at previously. And Yuha's completing it. And then Gerard actually points out that Udyu looks really nervous. And Udyu's like, well, yeah. And then Gerard's like, oh, don't worry, Yuha's gonna take it all, don't worry about it. So Gerard assumes that Udyu is nervous that Yuha's not gonna be able to like defeat the Soul King. And Udyu's like, bullet dodge. And that's when Yugram senses that it's been done. So he's like, it's done. And then they all walk back upstairs and reappear in front of Yuha. And that's when we basically get the shocked images from the manga and stuff like that. A little bit of different. You can see why they streamlined it in the anime. They just full on shoehorn it all right up there. They're already there.
Like, they were just waiting.
Let's get it done. And then we finish with a Grimmjow poem, My Claws Will Grind You Up. And then we get the title, episode 32, The Holy Newborn.
So good. There's actually a slight change. When they're talking about, hey, we got to get up there and stop it. I think in the anime, they're like, we can't let them see us. This has got to be a stealth mission. So in the manga, it's different. Ichigo just says, it's really high up. Like, I could make footholds, and I guess Orihime could lift you guys up. But it's a ways up there, and that's when Yodoichi says, bring out the Garganta.
Yeah, and I think during that scene as well in the manga, Ichigo specifically points out that, like, yeah, the people on Orihime's elevator, let's call it, would just get shot.
Yeah.
And so I like the change of, it's a stealth mission. We got to get in there without them seeing us.
Yeah. What did she use? It was like a little staff that had the Garganta outline on it.
You're talking about the little stake that was in the ground? Yeah. I think, because I was talking about this, I was actually, when I watched it, that was one of my questions when I watched it the very first time. And when I read the manga, I was like, it's a bit interesting to think of how they're able to just open the Garganta inside of the Royal Palace. Like, that's interesting, right? Like, if that was something that was available, that's insane. Like, that's really Jesus crazy. Christ,
that hollow Garganta.
Also, that Hollis could have a back door in the Soul Palace. So I was quickly rebutted. I was quickly rebutted against that. That does get explained later, and that is not something that they could always do.
Okay,
and I
so think it has special. Something
to do with that stake and the fact that they were able to open it.
I'm looking forward to that explanation because I straight up forgot.
Yeah, someone immediately told me, like, no, that's not something that I could do. Because I was like, yeah, same thing. I was like, wow, that's they could just crazy. Open the Garganta up there. Like, that's insane. And I think it probably has something to do with the people we're going to meet right after this episode. But what did you guys think of the episode as a whole, Jose?
Oh, I loved it. It's exactly what I wanted. Yep. It was a lot of those interactions that we were thinking of, the Basby and Renji. And even though it was just a clip, I thought it was hilarious that he was just pointing at him.
It was a great use of still images this episode. I think I could point back, if I was going to make my own anime, I would look at this episode for what is an acceptable and appropriate way to use still images in an anime. And I think this episode nailed it.
Yeah, because it was fantastic. We still got a lot of exposition while we were getting still frames and everything. So it was all good. I liked it a lot.
Pythes, what do you think?
This is my favorite episode of the core so far.
Love it.
We all talk so much about how we love Kubo's characters and how them interacting is the best part of Bleach. And that's just what this episode was. I think it was beautifully animated. I think everything they changed was for the better, except Omida, rest in peace. You got screwed up.
They just really want you to believe Omida sucks. Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I think he's cool. I think he's funny.
Yep. Unfortunate. I think episode was so good. So I can't say enough nice things about it. If you guys do want to watch, just a reminder, we do have our live reaction. Well, really, it's my live reaction to the episode. It is up on YouTube, which is a very edited version, very censored version of it. You can kind of catch the highlights of the episode there. If you want to watch the reaction to the full episode, completely unedited, with a lot more discussion about the initial thoughts, that is available on our Patreon, patreon.com/weebsguild. It is available for every single tier on there. So just pick any tier you want and you will get access to that. Do you guys have any final things you want to talk about for the episode?
I think it's really interesting that, like, Aizen is, he's nigh untouchable. He's a character everybody loves. He's very cool. He kind of gets dunked on a bunch in this. He's got, like, Mayuri's got a weird dial that he can just manipulate his spiritual pressure with. He gets stopped by Nanana. He's just constantly being annoyed by Shunsui. As much as Aizen is him in this episode, it's also like, listen, Aizen's not the end-all be-all. He's just another character, guys.
I would argue the opposite, that I think Aizen is the end all be all, where we've seen a lot of these things happen where, let's take Mayuri, for example. We've seen Mayuri use his technology time and time again, and he is like, Mayuri's the guy when mm-hmm. it comes to that. Like, you know, any sort of weird contraption, he is, for lack of a better example, he's the Batman of this world, where I feel like a little bit more than Urahara sometimes, because Mayuri is more on the front lines than Urahara, where Mayuri is like, yeah, I'm fighting this guy. Here's a new drug I've created to completely ruin your life. Like, here's a specifically made thing for Aizen that I know I cannot beat him on one front, so I'm going to focus my energy on another front of restraining the spiritual pressure just so it stays close to him. And then Aizen challenges him to a fucking face-off in it,
yep.
which is incredible. And then the same thing with Nanana. They had to go through this whole exposition of, like, I was only able to do it because, one, you're already restrained by this contraption, which helps me. You're one all or two also standing completely still, yeah. which helps me as well. And then I'm able to do it. And then he does it. And Aizen is, like, only immobilized and not knocked out. And he's knocked out for, like, 5 minutes. But even Shunsui has to come by, like, hey, that's really impressive. that didn't mess you up entirely. Now, it could have been a better example if we saw Nanana use that ability before successfully. Because, right, he tried to use it on Byakuya, but it hit the cloak and it didn't work. So it would have been cooler to see that work prior to that. So we get an example of what Nanana is at, like, full power. You know, like, how powerful he is. That would have been cool. But I think Aizen is still him. I think to this time that he's proved over and over again that Aizen is, like, the guy.
Yeah, because they had to go through all these extra lengths just to control him.
Well, and something that we talked about earlier, the pure anime-only scene that Aizen can sense the change in Yuha's spiritual pressure from the ground in the Sarite is an incredible feat.
Okay, so Shunsui's giving his speech and then it cuts to Aizen all alone on the ground. That gave me, like, massive Monty Python flashes, because, like, the Holy Grail, they're doing the song, and it cuts to the one guy outside clapping alone by himself. That's it. Those are all my notes. That's it. All I want to say.
So, question for you both, not related particularly to this episode, and a question for all of you guys. If you want to answer the question, leave your comment wherever you're watching or listening, and let us know. So, this question actually comes from Shindo5103 in our Discord. By the way, if you guys would like to join the Discord, we've got a lot of new people joining recently. It is so much fun. Join our Discord. The link is in the description for everything across the board. Join in there. There's a Patreon exclusive chat that's in there. There's a Bleach chat that's very active. A general chat. People are dunking on me all the time, making edits and stuff.
The minute I loaded it up the other day, all I saw was just pictures of Sam. I'm like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing it dirty already. People are
taking that PNG of me praying and just putting it everywhere.
Yeah.
So
the really bad one.
It's a great time to be in there. It's a lot of fun discussing everything with you guys. And Shindo5103 puts a question of the day in Discord. I don't know if you guys have seen it. So the first one, and this might be an easy decision for you guys, but really think this one through. Would you guys rather be in the middle of the first Quincy invasion or survive in Huecomundo for a day?
Huecomundo.
Yeah.
Okay, now let me pivot that question. Uh-huh. Survive in Huecomundo in the Menos Forest for a day.
I could hang out with what's his name?
Yeah, I was about to say the
Ashido.
Yeah.
Ashido's cool.
I'm like,
cool.
I mean, I'd find a way.
Okay. You'd find a way? Because I feel like you got to think, right? The Menos Forest is kind of like the Amazon forest.
Yeah.
Life, right. Where it's like, you don't know what junk is going to be down there. It's going to be just a horrible time. Now, can Ashido potentially save you? Potentially. But you would need to like duck and cover for a while. Like you'd really have to be safe. He didn't show up right away and save everybody. It took him a second, took him a while, you know? Right? So yeah, do you risk it? Also, first Quincy invasion, you're basically in the middle of a war.
I'm fucked. I could be shitting in the toilet,
yeah,
and one of them comes at me and I'm like, oh great,
you're basically in the middle of a war. So it's really, would you want to survive against the odds against wildlife, or would you want to survive against
roll the dice
war?
Baby roll the dice.
Here's my train of thought, right? I am just a normal human. I'm so weak and pathetic that I imagine I will just instantly be crushed by the spiritual pressure of a Minos. Whereas like I'm hanging out, I'm just chilling in Soul Society. Quincy's come. Before I have a chance to do anything, all I hear is Bankai, mustard gas, and I'm immediate. My lungs are immediately melting.
Oh no!
Yeah, they're both tough because if you do think about it in the terms of spiritual pressure, also Menos Grande are so big that you could just like, okay, pop, you're there, you get stepped on. It's like, oh, like, come
hey,
on,
we're
at, man.
Oh, God.
And same thing with being in Soul Society and things like that. They are obviously a bit more courteous with their spiritual pressure, so you wouldn't get evaporated right away, I would hope. And I think there's a good chance that, like, let's say you're in the first war, you could see, like, let's say the pillars come up, like they start invading, you just start running. You just start taking off for one of the gates and just hope for the best.
So, all right, so Pythes, we know Sam's Bankai would be mustard gas, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you pick as my Bankai?
Something to do with Grimmjow. No, something to do with heavy metal, because Avenged Sevenfold is your favorite band.
Oh, this is true.
Something to do with something that
now
happens.
Sam knows me really well, so
here's my train of thought. And Pythes, you can add into this. We're going to create a Bankai on the fly for Jose. I think it has to be something that like is hidden beneath his sunglasses. Like that's the reason why he wears sunglasses all the time. You know, like almost like an eye patch, but your sunglasses, Jose. And you take the sunglasses off, and something happens.
Okay, how familiar are you with that crazy like eye bite spell from D&D?
Not very familiar, because I've never had to use it.
I might be getting this wrong because all I know of it is from Baldur's Gate. But it like you can. I'm not even just. So, Jose, you take your glasses off, and your eyes are just black pits of shadow, and anybody that looks in your general direction gets transferred into basically a domain expansion.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
Also makes you very, like, gluttony from FMA.
I was going to say either give you gluttony vibes or Kakashi's
True.
And it transfers them into a place specifically built around whatever the hell your fighting style is.
And the weakness to it would be you blind Jose because he's sensitive.
Just turn on the literally turn on the lights.
Yeah. You have to find the light switch somewhere. While you have to get him while his glasses are off, and you got to like blast him.
So it's like the Bankai would be, it would change my clothes. I would get a cape because I love capes.
You're the perfect counter to someone like Tozen. Maybe you can only use your power when it's dark out. Like that's why you have to wear the sunglasses
sick,
all the
like
time.
Batman.
So Tozen hits you with his Bankai and then you activate yours.
So like,
it's like,
boom.
Yeah, and it's over.
Tozen can't look at me in the eyes. Yeah. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah. Oh, true, Jose.
Yeah, that's I'm
true.
Like, wait, damn it.
Then you guys are in a deadlock.
Okay, so then you would need to do the opposite of, like, the Saiyans. You know how they have to put the thing up to make it look like the moon so they could transform? You'd have to put up a thing to, like, block out the sun so you could use your Bankai.
Your best bud's Mayuri, and he, like, has a little shield that'll go over the sun, and then it's like, Jose, do your thing. Boom.
Boom. It's just, like, a giant glow, like, ball is casted. Ugh.
I'm imagining that, like, You don't get a Shikai, but your Bankai is always active, and people can just see black fire from underneath it.
We can combo attack Jose if you can somehow suck the people up and then also suck up my mustard gas at the
Yo,
same time.
Yo, that
and
would
we've
be
created
sick.
A gas chamber.
Me and you would be locked up. We would not be.
They'd be like, we'd be in the Mukin.
We'd be like, we'd become friends with Aizen somehow, and then they'd be like,
we'd be sent away. It's done. Yep. It's like they're not. They would see us in the Mukin. They'd be like, why are these guys in here? It's like, listen, they're not particularly strong on their own, but they cannot be together.
It's funny. We're not tied up, but we're just in two separate sections.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
And the whole time, I'm like, Sam, hello, yeah. Pythes. You love fate. So would you? I feel like you would have like someone appear.
Oh, so he's a summoning one. Hate to see that for that, Pythes. Those are always the worst Bankai.
Absolutely not.
The worst.
No, it's easy. I think fist fights are cool, and I like laser swords, so my Shikai is boxing gloves, and my Bankai is just Excalibur from Fate.
All right, sure. Yeah, go for it. That's great. All right, yeah. We've made all three of the powers. Done.
Except my sword will be black because I'm edgy.
So what was our decision on that, by the way? Are we going Quincy Invasion or Huecomundo for a day?
I'm going to try and survive in Huecomundo.
Okay.
I don't think I'm going to survive. I just want to die somewhere cool and Huecomundo's cool.
So I think if we were specifically going down, let's say we went specifically just Huecomundo, not Minos Grande Forest. I think Huecomundo, you'd have a very good chance of surviving by just being lucky and hoping nobody finds you. Like if you were on
just
the
hide
sand,
under a rock.
Yeah, like I think you could probably hide somewhere for 24 hours and just like fingers crossed that nobody, you're so weak, nobody senses you and you just like hide.
I'm just like, no one's
Minos
gonna kill
Forest
me.
Is a you whole other thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Minos Forest is a whole other thing where it's like now you're in the Amazon, that who knows what's down there.
Giant Gillians
it's
are coming at you.
It's gonna be a horrible time. Same thing with the war. I think no matter where you land in the war, it's going to be toughy. And
if
there's going to be people that move super fast and they're sentient.
True. That is true.
Also, like if this is like post-Blood War, like there's a chance one of Hollywood's people finds you is like, just get out. Go away. Here's a Garganta leave.
True.
Very
true.
Why are you here? Get out.
That is true. So, I mean, I still think Huecomundo is the better choice. I just think there's too many sentient beings in the first Quincy
Invasion.
Yeah,
there's a lot of variables.
And there's not a lot of nice people that are around during that first one, to be completely honest. And I think you could just get roasted.
As cool as I think Lil Toto is, I don't want her to eat me alive. That sounds awful.
Yeah, not great. All right, are you guys ready for one more question, also from Shinda5103? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, this is something that we kind of talked about before, but we'll go ahead and give an official answer. If you guys could pick any race slash faction in Bleach and you would get the same ability, so if you choose Soul Reaper, for example, you get Zanpakuto, you choose Sternritter, you get a random Shrift.
Arrancar.
Now, okay, you guys are both going to say Arrancar here, now I'm going to pitch you something else.
Uh-huh.
Someone had a great point, and thinking that we were talking about the powers of the Arrancar and how they got defeated so quickly, and also Gabe is trying to say that the Sternritters would instantly kill Bargon and Stark and Discord, which is fucking ridiculous. I don't know where that's coming from. Gabe and I are tight guys. I'm allowed to clown on him like that, but fucking ridiculous statement that he would say that. Bargon, he is AoE instant death. Ridiculous.
He's mustard gas.
Yeah, he is, Jose. He is. Anyways, someone brought up a good point, and the question was, do you think if all of the Arrancar had Segunda Etapa, they would have held a much better fight against the Soul Reapers. And the secondary point to that was, in that sense, you can see the Segunda Etapa as the Bankai to the Arrancar's Resurrection, where they were basically fighting the whole fight with only Shikai, and that's why they didn't perform nearly as well as what Aizen was hoping, or like Aizen, air quotes, wanted. So you guys would only have the first Resurrection. Still Arrancar?
I still think the Arrancar are the coolest race in Bleach.
I see. I was going based off what is like. I just think they're badass.
Okay. And now here's where I'm going to say you guys fucked up. Ready? Firstly, you guys should be picking either a Shrift or a Fullbringer right off the rip, because it's been shown that, well, for sure, Fullbringers, you get to keep your fucking powers when you go to the Soul Society.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
Why would you not go Fullbringer right off the fucking rip and just hope to go to the Soul Society when you die? Also, if you somehow become a Hollow, you still have a chance of becoming an Arrancar. I don't know if the Fullbringer powers necessarily go over there, but you still got a chance. You're still chilling. You can still do your thing. I think either way, you start off as Fullbringer. I think that's just the way to go. I think Fullbringer, pop it, done. You could still, with all the other ones, you could still potentially get a Shrift. You could still potentially get a they already said in a Club Outside question that I sent to Pythes, because I thought this was crazy. Pythes said not crazy. that they said each Uryu, Orihime, and Chad could awaken an Asa Uchi if they wanted to.
What? So
that's what Kubo said. That's what Kubo said.
Yeah, they haven't tried.
I thought that was crazy. So that being said, why would you not pick Fullbringer and live out your regular life and have a great time? Or same thing with Quincy, get a Shrift. Some of the Shrifts are pretty broken.
I've seen people say that, like, even Uryu might have Fullbringer abilities in him.
I've seen that rumor.
Yeah, and I was just like, what? But then when they, like, laid it out, I was like, okay, I guess I can see that.
Some of the Fullbring powers are pretty good, too. Yeah. Like, some of them are really good.
Oh, Rahima's Rejection?
Imagine, also, you take someone, like, from Can't Fear and World, Aura.
Oh, my God.
Where she is, like, the Fullbringer stats maxed out. She's really good. She's really, really good. So you can show, if you're the upper limit magic, you get to keep Aura's powers when you go to the Soul Society. Insane.
Oh, my God.
Insane.
Sam, if you had that with your mustard gas ability.
I'm min-maxing, dude. I'm min-maxing right now. Yeah,
nothing
incredible.
Can hold you.
I'm going to have the same conversation with you that I had to have with Gabe the other day. I do not care about meta. I do not care about what's best. He was talking to me about Union Arena and how I was like, oh, cool, the Stern Ritter deck's out. I got to get that. And he goes, those cards aren't good. You should get these. You should get these. And I said, I just want the cards I like because I think they're neat. I don't care about min-maxing. I think the Iran car are cool. That is the
Well, you're not going to think they're cool when I roll up and I have multiple abilities. I'm going to be like the avatar of the Bleach.
Sam's going to be the avatar. You're going to be Ichigo.
Yeah. I'm going to be all five races combined.
You're not going to get there. You're going to get distracted in the Forest of Minnows hanging out with Ashido.
I do love Ashido. He's so cool.
You never make it out.
Love that fucking guy.
Me and Pythies are going to be like, yo, so Sam coming?
Yeah, Fullbring 100%, dog. Fullbring. I think they show like Fullbring, you just enter the Soul Society. So fuck it. I'll pick Fullbring. Now, if we're really talking, we really want to get down to the nitty gritty. There's one correct answer. Do you guys know what it is? Here we go. The number one correct answer, any race, any faction, bounce. Okay. So you are an immortal vampire that can suck life from other people.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, but then you get sent to the not real dimension forever, and people only talk about you in whispers and hushed tones.
it's gonna be like the Legend of Dracula, but it's just Sam.
Yeah,
the Legend of
just
Sam.
Just me. I'm the only one. Great.
Okay, now Sam, you're about, but you have to fight Carrier for control. You don't get to be friends with him.
Oh, that's gonna be heartbreaking. It's gonna be like Berserk. Guts
no,
Griffith. That's gonna be tough. Because I just want to be his bestie, man. I just want to be best friends with my boy Carrier. I think I could talk Kario down the ledge at the end. You know, when Kario's like in full self-destruct mode, I think I could talk him down. Koga didn't do a great job. I think I could talk him down.
You're like, hey, buddy, I got some McNuggets. Come on, sit down.
Okay. So Sam, you're hanging out with Kario. You're high up there in the bounce. You convince him, let's not attack Soul Society. Let's just wait it out. Okay, the Iran-Kara invasion happens, and you're like, we're gonna go help them to ingratiate ourselves to Soul Reapers. You become friends with Ichigo.
I don't see where I'm losing here. What's the question?
I'm trying fan fiction now.
Oh, great. Yeah, love it. This is fantastic so far.
Damn, Sam. Imagine you got to meet Ichigo when they were inviting Soul Society for Rukia.
Yeah.
And then you don't even follow along with the invasion. You just
I'd be great.
You just stay out of Kukaku's house.
Yep. Done. Beautiful. Love it. Kukaku loves freaks. I'm there. So don't worry about it.
Your head is so bald, Sam. She says, rubbing it.
All right. Well, that's all I have for this episode. I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to discuss, or we want to move on to the captain's meeting.
Well, before we get to the captain's meeting, Jose and I have been cooking up more lists.
All right. So this is your blind rankings for like anime villains.
Got it. I'm ready.
Frieza.
Oh,
Frieza is iconic villain,
oh,
dog.
He's
really iconic.
I love Frieza. Oh, God. I'm going to go three.
Three? Okay. Safe choice.
I'm going to go...
because I always like Majin Buu more.
When watching DBZ, I liked Frieza. I thought Frieza was funny. Then I met Cell. I thought Cell was hilarious. Majin Buu, I wasn't as much in love with. I loved Fat Buu. I thought he
you
was
like
really
Fat
cool.
More,
he was
right?
lovable. I didn't really like so much the other version. I think Super Buu was cool, but I don't think he was as cool as Cell. I think Cell still took the cake on that. And then in Super and the movies and Brawly, Frieza was
Frieza's
hilarious.
Fantastic.
Super, super funny. I will put Frieza at a two.
All right. Now we got Griffith.
Oh, fuck Griffith.
I'll put Griffith at a three. Middle of the road for me.
I'm putting him at a five because I fucking hate him.
Just to spite him, you're like, you still don't get the top spot.
I think Griffith is also an iconic villain, and it's one of the things that people talk about all the time when they talk about like getting people into watch Berserk. Like it's Griffith in that the eclipse that happens. So I think he deserves his spot as a three when we're ranking villains.
You two don't know the shit he has done in the manga.
I don't want to know. I hate him.
I hate him so... I hate him more than Toki Nada. I'll say that.
Damn.
Nice. That's a five.
Next is the anti-spiral from Gurren Lagann.
I'll put that as a five. I don't super care for that one. I think Gurren Lagann is great. Love it. But I wouldn't rank the anti-spiral high as a villain, period.
Lord Genome was better.
I agree with that
yeah.
one.
So anti-spiral goes at four. I would not have thought to pick the anti-spiral. That's a good choice, Jose.
I'm trying to swing a little bit out and kind of, you know.
So I have one in four left.
All right. We got Shao Tucker.
Okay. Well, I'm putting Shao Tucker at number four. But so I got number one left. I'm just going to ride or die with whatever the last one we say is.
Did I pick anybody for one? I don't think I did.
I don't think you have.
Well, you guys haven't picked one.
Okay. I'm kind of tired of the Tucker meme, so he goes at two.
Okay, so mm-hmm. Pythies and I are both riding or dying on whatever the villain that gets said here for number one.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Ready?
Yeah.
That bitch, Toki Nada.
All right. Yeah great. Great. So
number one, baby.
I I kind of based my list off of historical relevance and how much I think they're going to be like. When you talk about the greatest villains of all time, that's what I was going off of for my list. I don't think Tokunaga's in conversation for that. I don't think – if it was Aizen, I think Creme de la Creme, my list would have been perfect. Would have been amazing.
I was going to add Aizen, but I'm like, no.
Tokunaga is obvious. A great villain. I don't think he will be remembered to the test of time like somebody like Aizenwood or Frieza or Griffith. I think Shao Tucker.
Unless the anime can't figure out world.
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like that would just be a movie, though.
It could go either way. Mm-hmm. So my final list was Tokunaga as number one, Frieza number two, Griffith number three, Shao Tucker number four, number five, Anti-Spiral. I think that list is pretty good. I'm very happy with that list, aside from Tokunaga's placement number one, but you get what you get.
For me, I would have just put Griffith at number one and Tokunaga at three.
I think that would have been good.
Yeah, so I pretty much base all my lists exclusively on how much I like them or how much I don't. Like, do they entertain me or not? So I hate Tokunaga, so I'm glad he's at one. I probably would have put Shao Tucker at four. I think he's kind of boring, but I guess he's going to stay at two.
I put him in there because he was Mimi.
Yeah, and I love Frieza, but I don't like him as much as Cell or Kid Buu. So I think three's the perfect spot for him. Anti-Spiral is really cool, but Genoma's better, so he's at four. And Griffith can burn in hell. May his name be forgotten. He belongs at five.
Okay, very good. Well, that will be the end of Bleach Boys proper. Now, we do have Bleach Boys Captain's Meeting, an additional 15 minutes that is exclusive to the Patreon only. If you guys want to check that out, patreon.com/weebsguild. We would greatly appreciate any of your support. Once again, you do get all your names in the credits. You get unedited access to the Bleach reactions. You get Bleach Boys the moment it's done editing, so you get it first before anybody else. And then you do get the extra 15 minutes of Bleach Boys every single time. And if you are on the captain level of our Patreon, you get a special individual shout out with every video. Thank you very much to our captain, PV. Thank you for your support. We appreciate everything that you do. And with that, we will see you guys next Saturday for another Bleach Boys episode. Be sure to leave your responses for the questions asked in the video in the comments. And be sure to leave a like and subscribe. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great week.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.